Blog Talk Radio.
This is Joss Ogonige,
Will Bluewater,
a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the
This is Joss Ogonige,
Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution
This is Joss Ogonige,
Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. As Bluewater...
Well, folks, I don't know what that's all about. Wow, this isn't going right, Jeff.
Oh, yeah?
Sounds like we're both high on ketamine or something. Oh, man, this is awful. All right, I'll tell you what. Just stay there. I'm going to log off and log back on. Everybody, just stay where you are, and I'm going to have to restart the show. Man, this is awful.
This is Joss Ogonige,
Will Bluewater,
a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. As Bluewater, 7th great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
One of these years, I'm going to have to change. I keep forgetting to change that ONAC intro. But sorry about the first 3 minutes there. I have no idea. I guess I had to. What I did is I got off of Skype, the Skype call I was on, and got on another one, and it was an echo, but it was a weird echo. Anyway, we're here, and you need to be here, or you're going to be square, or or round or something. So, anyway, our guest tonight is Jeff Standing Tall Gardner, and he's got some good news and some bad news, and I don't, you know how the joke goes, and you can give the news to us and whatever you want to, Jeff.
Well, first off, I want to say, Osio Tohitsu, greetings from the center of the universe to everybody out there.
Yeah, there you go.
What a beautiful day.
It is, it is. And, you remember, you've heard those, I've got some good news and bad news for you jokes. Let's see what's
I've heard a few.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, there's been some strange things going on in the Oklahoma Native American church land, and I don't know anybody that's better plugged in than Jeff is, so we'll let you give the play-by-play and the blah-blah. Oh, we got Mark with us tonight, too. And if you're with us, call in. The number's right on the screen. It's 347-996-3318, or you can Skype in. So what's been going on, Brother Jeff?
Well, like you say, it's been kind of good news and bad news all the way around. I've been recently blessed with a new baby girl. That's some pretty good news.
Mazel tov.
Can't beat that, actually. Kind of happy to have her with us. I told everybody a while back, just before she was born, that I was going to kind of disappear for a while. Most nobody would hear from me, you know, while I took care of these family matters. But, you know, like you said, a lot of stuff's been going on with the community. And, you know, and then I guess the best way to go about it is to back up a little bit and kind of bring everybody up to date on these court battles that's been going on since 2009. For those who don't know, in 2009, I went through a court battle in Carbon County, Utah, in which I had a lower court judge, Honorable Judge Storrs, ruled that I had the legal right to have in my possession Native American church sacrament, to wit, one cannabis pipe with cannabis resin in it. I was found not guilty, and therefore they removed them charges. Shortly after that, I was pulled over in Emory County, and during the subsequent stop, I had an officer confiscate about 3 pounds of peyote from me and about 1 ounce of cannabis. Now, this whole stop, everything about the stop was illegal, and I can go into all the legalities and the arguments that we did in court. But what boiled down to was I went to court, and I argued this case. I fought it for a number of years. I ended up getting found guilty, and I was sentenced to do 60 days in jail. So I went and I turned myself in to do my 60 days, and as soon as I got to court, as soon as I got to the jail there, I started filing some paperwork. I made some claims to the courts that my constitutional rights had been violated. And as such, I was requesting what's known as a trial de novo, or a new trial. Well, the upper court seemed to agree with what I had said, or at least felt that I had at least, they felt that I should be heard. So we took that Class B misdemeanor, and we went into the district court level here in Utah. Well, I went through it, went through a whole lot of bullshit. A bunch of the folks remember during the last interview, I talked about how I had foreseen that the prosecuting attorney and then the public pretender would end up working out some kind of deal where the public pretender would back out. That ended up happening. I ended up having to go and face them charges alone. I had no legal representation. Courts wouldn't allow it. They did some legal maneuvering and made it to where they didn't have to have a court-appointed attorney there. And then throughout the trial, every step of the way, every time I tried to enter in any evidence, anytime I tried to file any motions, anytime I tried to cite any cases, the judge interrupted me, told me he would not allow it, and shut me down. Well, after about 20 minutes of this judge telling me that he basically didn't care what I had to say, he finally shut me down, and he ruled with the words, he said, "This court does not recognize the free exercise clause of the United States Constitution as trumping state law. Therefore, we find you guilty." Now, mind you, during this trial, per se, there was some driving charges that were involved, okay? In fact, them driving charges caused a state of contention between me and one of my brothers within the church. And there was a lot of harsh words said between us. That brother felt that without having any trial or anything like that, I was automatically guilty of violating the state laws. And therefore, that brother decided he wasn't going to back me on anything. As a result, I ended up going to court, and I fought it myself. And lo and behold, they dismissed all the driving charges because they knew they were bullshit. In fact, the only legal leg the state of Utah had to stand on was the Controlled Substance Act. And the fact that they feel that cannabis is illegal, regardless of whether you have a religious exemption or not. Well, I took that. I went ahead. They because they couldn't put me in jail no more because of their legal maneuvering, I told them, go ahead and give me whatever sentence they was going to give me. And they sentenced me to something. I don't even know what it was. I have no intentions of paying their money. I will not pay into a corrupt state. Anyway, they sentenced me, and now it goes to my choice whether I'm going to appeal this and take it to the state Supreme Court or whether I follow some other advice that I've been given and just skip all the bullshit and sue the state of Utah as per Sections 241 and 242 of the United States Code of Rule. And those two sections basically state that everything that them officers, the judge, the attorneys, even the public defenders, all of them are guilty of what's known as domestic terrorism because of the way they've attacked myself and the constituents of the Oklahoma Native American Church of Huntington. The reason I say they've attacked my constituents is because there have been more than one person, but one person in particular was pulled over and illegally searched and subsequently arrested based on the fact that that officer thought that he may have been going out to our church grounds to visit with Reverend Gardner. That was the officer's reasons for pulling this gentleman over and searching him. That gentleman ended up taking that case, went to court with it, and they threw it out. Even the judge at that lowest level could see that it was an illegal search and seizure. Since then, I've had these other courts over in Carbon County going on. I go over there, I walk in, I have a lady friend with me. Well, the moment the officer, the jailer there sees me, he immediately starts doing all kinds of record searches, trying to see if he can't get me in trouble somehow. Well, I'm walking a clean road right now because I got these court things going on, and I want no other hassles. Well, what does he find? He finds a warrant on my ex-wife. Now, mind you, me and my ex-wife have not been together for 4 years. We've not been seen together for 5 years. But what's this cop do? He immediately assumes that the lady friend that happens to be with me at the time is my ex-wife, runs up, assaults her, grabs her, tells her that she must step into a private room with him. He won't tell her why, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Complete harassment. We ended up standing him off out in the courtroom foyer there. Made some other jailers come in and get involved so they could understand, you know. That cop had no business doing that to begin with. Well, then shortly after that, my baby is born. Now, I've been under the radar for you know, a number of years now. All my addresses have been listed as down home, about 90-some-odd miles from where I'm actually at the moment. Well, we go to the hospital. We have my little baby girl. My little baby girl, she's healthy. She's happy, you know. I go through the ceremonies there at the hospital, and I bless her. And, you know, she's born underneath that peyote button, et cetera. We bring her home. The day we bring her home, I'm not home 5 minutes. Child Protective Services is knocking on my door. I have literally not even sent my daughter home from returning from the hospital, and Child Protective Services is knocking on my door, questioning the welfare of my child because I'm a known cannabis activist for the Aquila Native American Church. Needless to say, a whole lot of horseshit going on. And now I'm pausing to see if we're still together, if I've lost you anywhere.
Oh, we're here. We're just
Okay, beautiful. It was so quiet, I wasn't sure. Yeah, long and short, you know, I've really got, you know, people don't realize the amount of harassment that's going on down here in Utah over those that choose to utilize cannabis. I'm one of the very few outspoken people here. Everybody here is so afraid of the police state and so afraid to say anything. And the reason being is because if they do stand up and open their mouths, they end up getting harassed like I've been harassed since 2009. These things are not getting any better, okay? I lost that case over in Emory County. You know, as far as the state of Utah is concerned, to utilize any sacraments besides peyote is illegal, regardless of what the United States Constitution says. Now, that being said, I have a case over in Carbon County, been going on just as long. All three of the cases over there happened within, like, weeks of each other back in 2009. This last case, I was on my way over to my ex-wife's house in Carbon County. I was on a pedal bike. I rode this pedal bike for like, I want to say it's like 4.5 miles from the house where I left to get to my ex-wife's house. You know, so I could go get my kids. I was going to go get them, and we was going to go out and pick some sage, and we used to make these sage smudges, and we'd send them all over the country to the different churches, you know. Well, we was going to go do that day, so I rode this pedal bike, and for like 4 miles of this pedal bike ride, I have this unmarked pickup truck following me. I mean, it really had me nervous because I'm going out of town. I'm going on you know, these back roads out into the South 40, if you will, and I got this unmarked truck following me, and I'm on a pedal bike. It's not like, you know, it's not like I was holding them up or anything. They'd go past me, and they'd pull into a neighborhood in front of me, and they'd wait for me to go by, and then they'd follow me out. So they follow me all the way out to my ex-wife's house. And when I get there, just before I get to her house, they come speeding up past me. All of a sudden, there's all these red and blue lights on this unmarked truck, and these two cops jump out. One is a helper police officer who's not in his jurisdiction, and he's in plain clothes, and he's not a plain clothes cop. So I'm assuming he's in his street gear. The other officer is a United States Forest Service officer. And they commence to arrest me on this warrant that this guy has supposedly got out for my arrest, the one that's in plain clothes, mind you. I get arrested. During the arrest, they found cannabis pipe, a little bit of cannabis, and they found that I had a knife that was gifted to me for skinning this buffalo that I had skinned a number of years ago. Now, that knife is what I used to cut sage with, you know. That's all it was ever used for, ceremonial things. The handle of that knife, the guy who made it, he made it from the dust of 4 different chinupas. When they was making the chinupas, that dust would come off of me, gathered it, he molded it together and made this knife handle. and it had a chip in it when I got it. So I took the dust from three other Chinupas and put into it. That knife handle was made from seven Chinupas. Very sacred knife in to me, you know, to you know, what I do with these medicines. You know, and the only purpose of that knife is to cut sage and sweet grass and to take care of the people. Well, because I'm an ex-felon, they find that knife, they find that cannabis in my possession, and they charge me with a felon in possession of a dangerous weapon, to wit, a knife, or a restricted person in possession of a dangerous weapon, to wit, a knife. And then the only reason they can call that a dangerous weapon is because by Utah law, if you're caught in possession of cannabis and you have a knife on you, then the knife's automatically a dangerous weapon. Okay, so are you catching some of the catch-22s here? They say, you know, anyway, yeah, it's a long story. The in Utah, the laws are, when it comes to a knife like that, you know, they have to be able to prove the intent behind a tool. Otherwise, it's a tool, okay? Mind you, I was on the fire department in the same town where they're charging me with possession of a dangerous weapon. They say I can't have a knife to cut sage, but at the same time, they're going to give me a 48-inch Pulaski. For those who don't know what a Pulaski is, it's a great big axe, and it's made for cutting down stuff like walls, whatever else gets in the way. Okay? So, you know, that county, that community, they give me these tools, these, you know, these bladed weapons, you know, the jaws of life, you know. There's all kinds of tools we use in the fire department, and they trusted me with them. Not only that, but they trusted me to go into their lives, or into their houses, into their lives, save their children, if that's the case. If their house is on fire, that's what they wanted me to come do that. Yet they don't trust me with a knife, apparently. Not to go cut sage, not to do medicine. Anyway, long and short, I have these two, this charged over in Carbon County. It's possession of a dangerous weapon and possession of cannabis. This is the same courtroom, although, mind you, it's the next higher level up, that I've already won this one time. And now, with some of the help from some of our brothers that have decided to get back and get with me on these things, I'm really confident that when I go to court on this, whether it be in the district level in this county, or whether it be in the federal level with this class action lawsuit that the Aquava Native American Church of Huntington is in the process of filing, I'm very confident that come the end of this, federal government will not only acknowledge, but will recognize and put out something to tell everybody, to leave those of us who are part of this movement known as the Aquava Native American Church the hell alone when it comes to our sacraments. And I need people to understand. I need people to understand, though. I'm going to court, and I'm standing up for these things over cannabis. But the issue is not cannabis-related. It's all of the earth-based medicines. All of them. If that makes any sense.
Question for you. I understand, and the court case you were in most recently, you were told by the prosecutor or somebody that nobody in the church is going to back you up. What was that all about?
In fact, the prosecuting attorney and the public pretender, just before he recused himself and left my case, he turned and he told me, he said, Jeff, one of the reasons why I have to walk away from this, just between me and you, is because there's nobody in your church that's going to back you on this. Every phone call I've been made has been returned with silence. And that being the case, you're out here standing alone. And then he recused himself from the case. The prosecuting attorney, Mr. Olson, Mike Olson's his name, he told me just outside the courtroom, he says, you know what? There's nobody here from your church. Nobody believes what you're saying, Jeff. Right now, it's just you, an ex-felon who has never done anything good for the community, and me, a public relations figure that everybody likes. Who do you think's going to win? And that's exactly what happened. We went into the courtroom, and it was me. I had one member of my church there who was just there to witness what was going on. And I went in there, and I did the best I could. But it's hard when you have a judge that won't even let you present any evidence in your defense.
Is that the case where you had the driving charges?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and so the judge had the gall to say
his exact words.
How does that happen?
This court does not recognize the free exercise clause of the United States Constitution as trumping state law.
Did you read the trial transcript? Is that what it says?
No, I remember that from verbatim because I was so shocked at the audacity of this judge to say that on open record.
What about the free exercise clause? Because this court doesn't do
like transcripts. They don't do a typewritten transcript. What they do is an audio recording. And I am currently waiting for them audio recordings to get to me from them.
Well, what about the Constitution of the State of Utah that says you've got a right to worship as you please, which is, I mentioned
both Article 1, Section 1, and Article 1, Section 4 of the Utah State Constitution. He chose not to make any mention of that. In fact, this judge did everything that I said before I was done speaking. They interrupted and told me they would not allow it. Like I said, I'm waiting on the audio recordings because as soon as I get them, I'm going to find somebody who knows how to upload this stuff, and I'm putting it out there for the world to hear what this judge said.
Okay, so you're going into federal court, and you're going to seek an injunction. Now, are you aware that Chief Rogers spends one day in his medical practice and the other in a researching this case to take it to trial?
No, I didn't. I'm not aware of a lot of what's going on outside of Utah as of recently.
Okay, keep talking. I'm gonna see if I can get him on the line. I gotta try to call him on a cell phone. Hang on. I'll see if I can get him on the show. You guys
Beautiful.
Just keep talking.
Yeah, what I got going on is I got a really beautiful legal mind who has successfully stood against this particular county in Emory County. I got this legal warrior that's a good friend of mine. He's also been a member of the Office of the Native American Church of Huntington since it was known as the Church of the Rising Moon before we accepted that olive branch that's known as Oklava. Now, this legal mind friend of mine, he's also agreed to enter into this class action lawsuit with me. And because of that, as soon as I can get these papers to him, with his mind, with what I've already got prepared, I have full intentions on filing this as a class action lawsuit. In fact, at this point, I know that I have enough to go after the state of Utah, Emory County, Carbon County, the prosecuting attorneys, the judges, the public pretenders, the police officers involved. At this point, it's when you take people's rights, you take their inalienable rights. That's what the Constitution says. The Constitution says that we have these inalienable rights. That means that nobody can take them away. Well, when people do take them away, there's consequences. Them consequences are also outlined. Like I said earlier, it's 241 and 242 of United States Code of Rule. It's Title 18, actually, Chapter 13, for people who want to do this research. Basically, what them two codes say is that anybody who, while acting under the color of law or acting as a government official in any capacity, if they conspire and or take away your constitutionally guaranteed rights, then you have the legal course, the legal recourse to sue them, to get recompense for this illegal action on their part. Now, I think that's what we're going to skip the whole going to the Supreme Court with it, and we're just going to take it directly into the class action lawsuit area.
Okay, here's what Chief Rogers just told me. He has to keep on the down low what he's planning to do. He says, he has told James this and others this. He says, you are insane to keep going to court on the state level. He said, you have got to get into appeals court and get suing as a plaintiff rather than a defendant. And until we get a declaratory judgment against, you're talking about if this goes forward, it'll probably happen in Las Vegas. If it happens in Vegas, one half of the United States of America, the circuit, because the circuits are different. If they took it to the court in some other state, the different circuits have different ideas. But if we get it into in front of a panel of judges in Vegas on the federal appeals level, it will change everything for us.
Exactly where I'm planning on going with this. Like I said, instead of going into the appeals process with that case, because if I appeal it, then it's more it's just like he's saying.
Oh, no.
It's insanity. It's more of them giving me the
right.
So rather than doing that, I'm suing. And that means that I'm the plaintiff, and that's exactly what I'm suing for, is a declaratory injunction for relief, both post and previous relief on this declaratory injunction.
Yeah, four and a half of, you and the church.
Absolutely.
And,
myself, my other brother who's going to be entering into this with me, a young lady that may enter into it, as well as Aquava Native American Church of Huntington, which represents approximately 100-some-odd people.
Okay, yeah, and Chief Rogers has guests right now, or he would have gone on, but we're going to get you together with him over the phone to discuss this. But, sorry to interrupt, but he wanted me to pass that along to you.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, as soon as we can find time to get together, that would be awesome. Speaking of getting together, I'm really excited about what's going on the Facebook world. A new group just formed, ONAC Legal Resources. I'm really excited about that. It looks like it's a place where all of us who are dealing with discrimination and the illegal practices of the police state, encroaching upon our religious rights, this is a place where we can gather and exchange information.
Hey,
and,
do you have her phone? Do you have her phone number out there in Oregon?
Yes, I do actually have her number as well. We've been talking a little bit.
I'm
really happy about this resource on Facebook.
Is there any way you can get on? Let's see. Okay, I don't have the phone number. I don't want you to give it out, but I sure would like to get her on the show on. So if you're out there listening, what's her name?
That would be our dear friend, Mrs. Graves. She's a cannabis activist out there in Oregon.
Joy Graves,
beautiful.
Yeah, I didn't have her number, and I've tried to get a hold of her. I wish she'd stick her head up or give a call. And,
I will be sure to pass along a message and let her know that you'd like to put words with her, and see what kind of magic can happen.
Well, I left a message on the ONAC Legal Resources Facebook page, hoping, somebody would call in. So if there's anybody else out there from ONAC, please call in right now, 347-996-3318. I know we've got some other folks out there, and we'd like to hear from you. Well, what do you think of all this, Mark?
I'll tell you what I see happening with these groups and stuff that's going on, you know. What happens, a lot of times people say things, and somebody else is going to get offended by what that person says. That doesn't mean what was said was wrong, and it doesn't mean that the person who got offended's wrong either. It's just we don't necessarily know how to communicate with each other, you know. So we get into these social media settings, right? And like me, see, I didn't know. I was informed the other day that I kept yelling at everybody. And I asked them, I said, what the hell do you mean that I'm yelling at people? I'm typing on a computer. How can I yell at somebody through text? And they said, well, you keep putting all capital letters when you're typing. And I said, well, that's just because the stupid caps button on my phone doesn't want to work for me. I got a POS phone. He says, well, you need to quit yelling at people. I didn't know I was yelling at people. Since when do you yell at people when you type them a letter? I never heard of no such thing, you know. So anyway, we have these things happen, you know. People get misunderstandings, you know.
Now, you know, there's been other arrests. Mike Briscoe told him that the president of ONAC Los Angeles was arrested, along with a Navajo elder that came up to get medicine. And didn't have a lot of details on that. It happened in Sacramento. There was somebody up in Happy Camp. I don't know. There, this guy claimed he was an ONAC member, but he was planting, you know. It was really weird because I spent 3 months in Happy Camp just by accident back in the winter of 2009. And that property where they claim they were planting stuff, which was next to their sacred area, the Karut don't own that area. They don't own the area right there next to the river that was their sacred area. They get to use it, and then there's another property. So I don't know how those people that surrounded this guy even had the legal right to go on the property to hold him for the police. I don't know how that worked. Does anybody know who this guy was that claimed to be Aklava?
You know, I've not heard a lot on that story. I read the story in, you know, out of the paper from out there when it first happened, but since then I have heard nothing more about it.
Oh, and the paper was really cute. It says it talked about James Mooney being a self-proclaimed Indian. Well, that's interesting. If he's self-proclaimed, that means that he is several people in himself. He's Chief Gary Tom, you know.
Right.
He's a lot of different people all rolling into one person, because he's been proclaimed as a medicine man worldwide by a lot of people from the time he was 5 years old. And that's really funny. I thought that was really rich.
Well, you know, I got to say, you know, there's a lot of people put out rumors, you know. Ever since James started coming out into the world and coming into his own when it comes to walking these medicine roads, you know, there's been a lot of people out there, and they talk a lot of smack on James, you know. Now, some of them people may have some kind of basis in what they're saying, you know. But what happens is, just like I was talking about a minute ago, somebody gets offended by something and then they blow it out of proportion. So, you know, the next thing you know, you hear about how this self-proclaimed medicine man has a cult of followers. You know, it's funny. It wasn't but a couple hundred years ago people were saying that about saying the same thing about a guy named Joseph Smith and this cult of followers that followed him all the way across the known world at the time, you know, all the way across America, out into the Indian country, to this place called Utah. And that guy was more than a self-proclaimed medicine man, or a priest, if you will.
Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of other... It's really nasty, because... Here are Mormons who should know better, whose governor has stood up with the head of your church, and this is so stupid. This is a replay of the 20s and 30s, and these people are self-righteous. I just cannot believe. Well, I can, frankly, but it's just. I mean, here you've got the New York Times editorial staff coming out and saying, we need to legalize cannabis. But, I mean, they're talking for, you know, medicinal and maybe recreational use. I mean,
you're also talking about the largest mafia organization in the world. We call them the United States government and the criminal justice system, okay?
And all the mafia police.
These guys do nothing more than hold you hostage and demand you give them money. And if you don't, then they're going to hold your family hostage too.
And now what about the police that are working with the cartels here in this country, and maybe even judges? Now, you know, it's rumored, you know, in this community where I live, that or in communities around that are like it, that the people that are in charge are running the marijuana because they want to keep control on it, or the cops themselves. How's that different from Mexico? Maybe the cops here aren't cutting people's heads off, but, you know.
No, they're putting them in jail. We have the largest prison population in the world. We have more people in prison than China does. Explain that one.
Yeah, we had, like, what, 400,000 20 years ago, and now it's 2.4 million, something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And now we have a private prison suing the state because they're not keeping it full.
Exactly. Now you're starting. Now people are beginning to understand, you know, what's really going on. This is not about justice. This is not about people obeying laws. This is about people being controlled and obeying the slave masters. And people may not like it if I say it like that, but that's exactly what's going on in our world today.
Well, do you think we've got a little bit of people with alligator mouths and hummingbird asses in the church?
I said it.
Sorry, I said it. I'm just saying.
You know, there's a lot of truth in that, you know. And, you know, a lot of people will even say I'm one of them guys that has a big mouth. You know, I really do. I have a big mouth, and I get loud. I get loud, and I get stupid, and I get ignorant. And I act like any other human being, because that's what I am, as a human being, and I make mistakes. You know, but there's a reason why I get loud, you know, and a lot of times people don't understand, you know, I get loud because this is truth. And, you know, it's just like, I'm going to throw a name out there that I don't use a lot, a brother of mine. You know, I say brother and understand there's no blood relation between me and this man, even though we have a similar name. A brother of mine by the name of James Gardner passed away here a while ago. Well-known Ute medicine man, well-respected by many, many people out here, you know. Even James used to tell us all the time, you know, that the grandfathers, when they speak the truth and they demand that you tell the truth to somebody and they speak through you, they speak loudly because they want people to hear. And a lot of people take that wrong and they turn away. But you should never turn away from the teachings of the grandfathers, even if they offend you, because sometimes there's something in that offense that you need to reevaluate about yourself and figure out why it is, you know. And so now we have this thing going on with our church, and we have a lot of people who get upset because somebody else in the church said something that they don't agree with. Now, I'm here to tell you guys, and I'm here to tell everybody today, if we keep fighting over petty bullshit amongst each other, this church will never be recognized in the international community. It's all right for us to have cultural differences. That's what makes this church so great. When I first seen James Mooney come into the prison, way back in 1995, I was there as an inmate. I was there as a man that had gone to a church group, to a circle, so that I could get right with myself, so that I could go back out into this world out here, outside them iron bars, and I could face my family, and I could hold my head high and know that I'm okay with who I am and what I am. And you know what? In that circle, I achieved that. And to this day, I still tell people I represent that circle inside the prison. And the reason I say that is because I've never, ever in my life met anybody that was more upstanding and true of heart than them brothers that was in prison with me, that were willing to stand up and speak to each other and say harsh things if that's what was necessary in order for each of us to come to an understanding and get right with ourselves and the Creator that we understand. So that's what we need to do as a church. We need to be able to accept each other and our cultural differences. Just because one guy puts the skull on the lodge facing one way, puts it on the altar facing the east, doesn't mean that the guy that comes along and he's supposed to do it facing the west is wrong. It means they come from a different tradition. And we need to understand that amongst our different branches.
Oh, absolutely.
We have many branches and many people here that's represented in different cultures. And there's no need for us all to be fighting amongst each other. We should all be standing together as one cohesive unit. And we're going to walk this church into the future. Aho, Matakia.
Oh. Now, let me digress a little bit. I'm going to get this right up on the page where people see it when they listen to this. That, what was that judge's name? Was that Emory?
In Emory County. You know what? I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Okay, so he said, quote, "This court does not recognize that the First Amendment of the United States Constitution free exercise of religion clause trumps Utah state law." Is that what he said?
His exact words were, "This court does not recognize the free exercise clause of the United States Constitution as trumping state law."
Okay,
therefore,
now hang on a second.
"I find you guilty."
Okay, hang on a second. "This court does not recognize that the," hang on, let me get this, "the free exercise clause," is that what he said?
Yep.
The free exercise clause of the First Amendment.
No, of the United States Constitution.
Okay, of the United States Constitution. Trump's, go ahead.
State law.
Trump's state law. Oh, so he's speaking for 50 states.
Well, he's saying that it doesn't trump Utah state law was his reference.
Okay, and Trump state law, and then he said, "And so we finally get what?"
"And so, therefore, we find you guilty."
Okay, and so, therefore, well, you know what? He may live to regret that.
Well, I'm telling you, there's... And it gets deeper and deeper, you know. The more paperwork, that they generate on this, the deeper these people become, you know. But it's going to take all of us, and that's what I'm trying to get people to understand. We need everybody to support each other. Just because we don't use the same medicines, just because one group uses ayahuasca and another one uses peyote and another one uses cannabis, doesn't mean we can't back each other, because all of these medicines come from our Mother Earth, and that's what this is about. It's about all of the Earth-based medicines, and that's what we need to get everybody to focus on, not just one sacrament or another, because that's how they get us. They divide us up, and they say, "Oh, well, James says the only thing he recognizes is peyote. Okay, that's fine. So you're saying he never takes an aspirin either? Anyway,
well, Jeff,
I'm sorry.
I don't mean
to get up on my pulpit like that, you know, but that's what I need people to understand is that this has got to be all of us together.
Well, Jeff, you know, it's not even stuff like that they go after, too. They go after people selling milk.
Untaxed cigarettes. Staten Island, it will get you killed.
Yeah, I just read a post today where the police stormtrooped a house and stole a baby because the parents had the audacity of having that child at home rather than in a hospital.
Yeah, that's right.
The name of that judge, by the way, is Douglas B. Thomas. Case number is
1317-00039. And his name was what again?
Douglas B., as in Bravo, Thomas.
Okay. I'm going to Twitter that mugger. That's really something. Okay, case number 1317-00039, Emory County, Utah, Judge Douglas B. Thomas recently declared from the bench, this court does not recognize that the free exercise clause of the United States Constitution trumps state law, and so therefore we find you guilty.
Yep.
And how retarded is he? That's wild.
Well, apparently really retarded, because what he did is instead of just having to deal with my case, now he's going to have to deal with a class action lawsuit. Because that there, now see, what people need to understand is a class action lawsuit is different than just suing. Anybody can sue. But you have to have three or more people that have been a victim of the same thing in order to make it a class action lawsuit. Well,
yeah.
I have, in that one county, three separate victims of that one courtroom, of that same sheriff's department, and I can show unequivocally that Oklava Native American Church is being targeted and attacked. And I can do it with their own paperwork.
Oh, yeah, they're right. You know, I was an executive with the Boy Scouts of America. I figured out that every little stake, regardless of what the president of the church said, every little stake was running their own little church, because they weren't running the scouting program. They were running basketball or boys club or some other thing that was, you know. And so now we can see that on the state legal level. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
interesting.
So yeah,
lawless.
And here's the beautiful thing about this, okay? Now, because they've made the mistakes they've had, you know. Yeah, I've got some cases. Yeah, I'm facing felony charges. Yeah, I could end up going back to prison because I chose to stand up for my rights. They told me when I went to court this last time over in Carbon County, I said, hey, Jeff, they're willing to dismiss the weapons charges. They'll drop all the felonies and everything. But this is what they want. They want you to plead guilty to the cannabis charge, and they want you to give up your knife and the tomahawk that they did not confiscate from you. I said, what? You want me to give up the religious paraphernalia that doesn't even belong to me? It belongs to the people of the church that I represent? And they said, oh, yeah. And I said, well, I can't do that. That's not my property. That belongs to the church. I says, if you want me to steal from the church, then you'll continue with this type of a deal. I was even willing to make a deal with them if they didn't ask me to give up the religious paraphernalia that I carry for the people. They wasn't willing to do that. They wanted my stuff from the church. So I told them go to hell and I'd take it to court. And so now I get to go, and this isn't something that I want to do, mind you. This is them charging me. So what do? I get to take it before a jury of 12 people. And we've got it. Even the attorney that's representing me at this point has not made any effort to step down from it. He doesn't want to represent this case because he doesn't want to make the constitutional argument. And I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to try to sell me up the river every chance he gets. But here's the deal. I get to go before 12 people from that area. And I get to talk to them. And I get to explain to them how I am a firefighter. How I have saved their lives, their children's lives, their families, their cousins' lives. You know, how I've done these things for the community that show what kind of a person I am. And I'm not somebody that you need to fear because I have a sage-cutting tool, which is what the prosecuting attorney is going to try to tell them people. Now, at the same time this is going on, I get to go before, guess who? Douglas B. Thomas, the exact same judge that just found me guilty in the other county. So I get to ask him again to put it on record how the free exercise clause of the United States Constitution doesn't mean anything when it comes to his courtrooms. Anyway,
yeah. Well, like
long, and
Roger
short,
said,
long and short is that they're attacking me, and I'm not going to step down from it. I will stand up, and I will fight for these things to go through so that everybody has the legal right to utilize the earth-based medicines that the Creator provided for us. And I'm going to do that whether anybody stands up and backs me up on it or not. The truth is, as I see a lot of people that are starting to understand that if we all stand up together, there's no way they're going to stop anything. Look at what they did down there at that Bundy Ranch over there in Nevada. A whole bunch of farm boys got together and backed the federal government clear the hell out of the state. Now, if them farm boys can do it, then our church can do it. And we don't have to have a bunch of guns to do it. We just got to have our voices, and we got to have our people to stand together as one cohesive unit. Oh, Matakias.
Well, I guess so. Wow. Huh. I just don't know what goes through people's minds. Wow. I wish my friend Judge Grant were still alive. He sat on the circuit court there in Salt Lake and jeez, that's just incredible. Just incredible. Well, you know, I guess it just looks like there's just a real war going on in this entire country over a lot of things. And it's such a mixed bag. You know, personally, I come down pretty much on the conservative side of things, and I agree on a few things that my liberal friends are saying as being, you know, I mean, since the 60s, this has been true. And a lot of times I think my liberal friends are just totally nuts because they're shutting down and trying to trying to define what words say. They're trying to say to conservative elements that you don't have a right to talk about this. That we're going to control you hear what I'm saying? And you've got this war of words going on both sides, and it's like two dogs that are barking at each other. And when that it's like when you and your wife get into an argument, you're screaming at each other. Not, you know, your frontal lobe shuts down, and it's just your lizard brain yapping back and forth. And that's what's going. I mean, that's what happened before the Civil War in this country.
I'm going to take it one step further, and I'm going to call it how I see it. Okay, all this bullshit that we see going on right now, not just in our country, but in the world, all of that is bullshit that's been engineered to keep everybody from realizing one simple fact. When it comes to America, it does not matter whether you're Democrat, whether you're Republican, whether you're conservative, or whether you're liberal. We now live in the corporate state of America.
Oh, yeah, you got that right.
We are represented by a board of pardon, a board of directors that we call Congress, and we have a public relations figure that we call the president. And the truth of the matter is it doesn't matter what anybody is saying on TV, because Congress is going to go into their back rooms and they're going to make their little secret meetings and they're going to write out what they want us to obey. And they do it over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a police state. Yeah, most definitely. And
when I was young, our biggest fear was the Russians. Why was it the Russians that was our biggest fear? Because they was the only other country in the world that had the same type of firepower we did. And so what did we call that? We called it the Cold War. Why was it a Cold War? Because nobody was getting killed, at least not overtly.
Not much.
Well, now they don't care. Now there's enough power and control under their guns that they don't care how many people they kill right in front of us. When I was little and I was watching and I was reading them books, 1984 by George Orwell,
yeah.
A Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, never in my life did I expect to see anything like that. But I'll tell you what, we're living in a brave new world today. Because police officers can randomly kill people and rampantly kill people the way they do, and the American public just allows them to do it without any cry of outrage, I'm telling you, it is a brave new world we live in.
Oh, they come in and shoot your dog. And then they won't even let you, while it's bleeding to death, well, we gotta wait here and take pictures of it. It's just our procedure. We gotta investigate it, you know, and won't let you save the dog. And, you know, it's just it reminds me of something Satan said, you know, about making you afraid.
Absolutely. Control
That's
through
a,
fear.
Yeah, I want to make you afraid. And you know what Geronimo and his people thought about that crap? They just said, screw all y'all, we'll just die free of you.
Well, that's just it, you know.
Because they knew,
many of our elders and our ancestors, you know, them native ancestors, when they was fighting against Wasichu to come to this country, you know, many of them got arrested and they got imprisoned, and they would die when they was in prison. You know, and they asked them, they asked people, they said, how come them guys are dying in prison? He said, because they've never seen no four walls like that before. He says, you take away their will to live, they're going to die. You know, they said, oh, well, they need to get over that, you know, because this is the way it's going to be. You know, and a lot of them elders chose to die rather than to be in prison. And then we even have some of the presidents of this great nation. I can't remember exactly which one it was. I want to say it was Abraham Lincoln. And I want to say that his words were, it is the first duty of every prisoner to escape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's if you're a prisoner of war.
Well, what do you call it? What do you call it? They're the ones who labeled it a war on drugs, even though it's a war on people.
Yeah, true.
They called it a war. So it's our first duty to escape. Well, I say the way we can escape this is if we band together and make them recognize that God's laws trumps man's laws.
Yeah. Well, and then people have to understand that when you get into that territory, according to the Torah, you're becoming what's called a zealot. And of course, you have to decide then whether it's worth it to take to the wall. You know, even though you might have a family, and everybody to take care of. You can be completely in harmony with Creator's will and mindset, but you got to weigh that against is it worth me getting killed and leaving a family behind to fend for themselves? That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. I mean that really is a tough one. But I'll give you some examples of what's happened because people either did or did not do that. You know, of recent, you know, over these last say 100 years or so, we've had fewer and fewer people that have been willing to stand up and speak out about what was wrong. Okay, and so over these last 100 years or so, the police state that we've been talking about continues to grow stronger and stronger because it's left unchecked. Now, see here, not very long ago, I'm going to say five, six years ago, I had a conversation with my mother. And I told my mom, I said, Mom, I can't let them do this. They're going to steal our nieces. They're going to take them away, and they're going to send them away to where none of us ever get to see them again. That's our family. And they're doing it for the wrong reasons. I can't let it happen. My mom says, Jeff, but if you stand up, you know there's going to be what we call government reprisals. They're going to come after you, Jeff. And I says, you know, and me and my mom got in a fight over this. My mom didn't want me to stand up. She didn't want me to resist because, you know, I was going to have the government coming after me if I did. I walked outside, and I loaded my chinupa, and I talked to the Creator about it, and I asked the Creator, hey, you know, what do I do here? You know, that's my family over there. They're getting ready to be stolen by the state, you know. Do I let them do that? So I got done talking to the Creator, you know, and I walked in, and I was really mad at my mom, you know. And that's not right for her. It's not normal for me to be mad at my mom. But I didn't like the fact that she wasn't backing what I was telling her. I walked in, and I looked at her, and I said, Mom, I have something to say, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd just let me say it. I said, you and my father raised me to stand up for what was right. You raised me to listen to the Creator. You raised me not to let the little guy get beat up. And my mom says, yeah, that's right. And I said, well, I already done all these years in prison because I let these big guys beat me up and put me in jail. Why? Why did I go to prison? Yeah, I stole a chainsaw. Does that deserve 13 years in prison? No, I don't think it does. Okay? There's a lot of reasons why I went there. I tell people sometimes, they ask me, why did you go to prison? I tell them I was a political prisoner. They say, how is you a political prisoner? I tell them, well, we had a new prosecuting attorney and a new county judge. And they needed to make a name for themselves. So they took me, that common thief, the one who stole the chainsaw, and they locked me away for 13 years. That way nobody could ever have to worry about that thief coming into their neighborhood again. Does that punishment fit the crime? No, it don't. Dan Cox, the guy I worked for, the guy I stole the chainsaw from, me and him have buried the hatchet years and years before the prison sentence was over. You know? So I went to prison as a political prisoner, not because I was a horrible guy, you know. So I went to prison, and I get out, and now I'm standing up for my nieces, you know, and people ask me, I say, well, you know, you ain't got nothing but a bad name because you're a prisoner. And I says, I don't care. It's still my family, you know. And guess what? The state did take my family from me. They took them two nieces from us. You know, they claimed that the family, that their parents were financially unstable, and that's why they took them children out of the home. Now, mind you, this is the same year that all the banks got the bailouts because the whole country was financially unstable. Now, the beautiful part is a number of years have gone by, and them children are older now, and they still remember their parents. And now they've started to ask, and they want to meet their parents, etc. And so now, who knows? Maybe another couple years might go by, and then children are still going to remember their parents,
and they're actually going to go see their parents because they're going to be old enough that nobody can stop them no more. You know. What does that all boil down to? It all boils down to the fact that I did make the choice. And this is the choice that everybody needs to make. Are you going to let your children be put in prison because you did not stand up? Oh, Matakios.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a similar conversation with my parents. You know, I joined the LDS Church back in early 1977, and it didn't take me long to see there were soon things that were wrong. And 1984, here comes, of course, I didn't know it was Mad Bear Anderson until 84, I didn't know who he was until 1996. But in 84, he comes to me in a dream, and long story made short, I ended up figuring out some things. Really, what was the original intent of Joseph Smith was to get everybody in what we call the Red Road nowadays, or what's labeled the Red Road. And, you know, and that's really easy to prove if you look in the right place. And the church, there's a book published about it called The Keys of the Priesthood Illustrated by Lynn and Stephen Bishop. And you can find that in Salt Lake County Library System. You won't find it in the city library, but you can buy a copy of it here and there. But they're absolute proof of what Joseph Smith intended to do. And because the Book of Mormon talks about, you know, we're supposed to look for, in 2 Nephi chapter 3, he's supposed to be looking for a choice seer who's a future Indian prophet. And Joseph published in, before he died, I believe it was section 84, he was asking the Lord, well, when am I going to see you again? And the Lord was, you know, he was under condemnation. The church had been under condemnation since 1832. He says, trouble me no more about this, but if you live to be 85 years ago old, you'll see me again. Well, 5 days after what would have been Joseph Smith's 85th birthday, the massacre at Wounded Knee happened because Jesus was visiting Wovoka, and the Paiutes and Indians from all over North and South America gathered over at Walker Lake about 300 miles west of Salt Lake. Yeah, you know, and you know, Ed Decker, you know, who's a real famous Mormon eater, got a big ministry over there in Salt Lake, and you know, he was talking about all the, you know, what a false prophet Joseph Smith was. And I wrote him and I said, of course, he would say, oh, well, you know, that prophecy that Joseph Smith said, you know, something was going to happen in 1890 never happened. I wrote him back and I said, you're wrong about 1891. And I told him what happened. And he says, wow. He says, that's the first I've heard of it. You know, here it is, 130 years later, practically, and the man never heard of it. And yeah. Joseph Smith and one of Joseph Smith's plural wives put it in both newspapers in Salt Lake when it happened. And there was some discussion about it at the time, but it basically, the church treated it like it was a non-event. But the church had already been under condemnation for 60 years by then, so. You know, I just, you know, I'm a guy that takes people at face value. You know, I more or less converted myself and sailed through the missionary lessons and met a gal, you know, from Portland who'd been a returned missionary 8 years older than I was. And we, you know, we got married and we lived in a lot. We got to sample a lot of different places. And basically we found that, you know, the real church was not in Utah. It was out in the mission field. But, you know, most places in Utah, you know, people were pretty cynical, and they just weren't like the members outside the state who were pretty excited about things. But you could really see it in the scouting program because, matter of fact, one day I'm at home. I'm working my fingers to the bone, not literally, but my wife got so fed up with it. I was on the phone with a stake president of the Monument Park Stake, the richest stake in the Salt Lake Valley. And, you know, I'm trying to get him to get his people to do what the head of the church wanted them to do. And my wife was in the living room, and I couldn't see that she was seething. And she said slowly, she said this, and then she said, "Is bullshit." And I could hear it resonating in the phone. And there was this long silence from this on his end, and there was a long silence on my end. And I said, "Okay, President." I said, "Now you see. Now you see why. You know, you've got it." At that time, I said, "Look, now you know why our." And I said, "I know. You know, a lot of kids." I said, "Are you an Eagle Scout?" "Yeah." I said, "Do you feel like you earned it?" He says, "Well, no, not really." I said, "Why?" He says, "Well, they ran us through there pretty fast." I said, "Yeah." I said, "If you're not an Eagle Scout by the time you're 13, you're pretty much not going to be an Eagle Scout when you're a Mormon." And, you know, the church puts out all this stuff about how many Mormons are Eagle Scouts. And now we got Mormon Eagle Scouts that are, you know, serial killers. And, you know, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. And, you know, and so I quit the Scouts and went to work for Boys Town and as a family teacher. And I had some eyes open there. And so I decided that, we moved to Independence, Missouri, and I was teaching seminary. Decided, well, maybe I'll teach seminary for the church. So I ended up coming all the way back to Salt Lake, went through the pre-service training, and they stuck me in as a student teacher at Murray High School. And they had 50 kids packed into this room, and they were, I mean, their behavior was worse than the kids at Boys Town. And one day I'd had enough. There was this one little snarky SO whatever that sat by the door, you know, because that's as far in as he wanted to get. And he was just the – and I was told, you know, if you ever kick a kid out, you're out of the program. I kicked his – after putting up with his crap for about 10 days, I kicked his butt out. And I told all the rest of them, I said, "You kids,
yeah, get in here."
I said, "You've got the same behavior problems as the 10 boys I had at Boys Town," and I said, "They've all been through the juvenile justice system." I said, "I don't know who your parents are, but you guys need to think about that." And I said, "I'm sure I'm out of here." And so I got called into Brother Stephen Iva's office, and he said, "Well, you know why you're here, don't you?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "But let me tell you something, Brother Iva." And I said, "I noticed you got the Journal of Discourses, all 26. Down there on the floor." I said, "I noticed they got dust on them." I said, "You ever read them?" "Well, no, not that much." I said, "You really ought to." I said, "You know what Brigham Young said in there?" He said, he called the Latter-day Saints, he says, "You are dumb and stupid as dumb asses." And he says, "The situation's so bad," he says, "that if the Lord wanted to, he would use me or Joseph Smith to lead you astray." And so here we come in 1890, the president of the church, even though President John Taylor knew, I mean, that manifesto of 1890, they wrote it in 1880. And he said he'd rather have his tongue torn from his throat and his right hand severed than sign that document. He says, "I'll leave that for my successor to sign," and he did. And so even though the first three presidents of the church all said, that we could lead you astray if you deserve it, and that's what God did with King Saul. So here comes Wilford Woodruff, as I recall. And, it's not the program of the church that the Lord will ever lead the church astray. So here they are, they're just totally, they don't know their hind end from a hole in the ground, and they think they're so righteous. I mean, Jesus thought that the Pharisees were self-righteous? Gee whiz.
Right.
I wonder if they would crucify him yet again. Because they're sure.
There's not a doubt in my mind.
Oh, they're crucifying, you know, guys like him? I mean, gee whiz. And here you are using the same substance that he was using 2,000 years ago that nowadays heals the same stuff that he was healing back those days. And here you've got this big war going on, you know, with a substance that's not near as has the problems of alcohol or any of the things. And you got this big war going on. And, but you know, looks good. But, you know, I really wonder, are the feds ever going to move on this? Is it going to be another 5 years before they get around to doing this? Or, you know, oh, I don't know. I'll shut up for a while. I'm mad. Don't get me mad.
Oh, I so understand. But hey, since you brought it up, I want to just throw a shout out. You know, you mentioned scouting programs, you know. So I just want to throw a shout out to those boys and girls that are part of the Aquava Native American Church of Huntington scouting program.
You know, oh, you got one, huh?
Well, we do. It's not the Boy Scouts of America, but we are putting a program together in which we want them youngsters to not only learn the ceremonies, but also to learn them same basic survival skills that I learned when I was in the Boy Scouts, et cetera. You know, and so, yeah, we got a really good group of kids. It's both boys and girls. You know, these kids, they come, they help us put the sweat lodges together. You know, they use the lashing skills that they've been learning. They build us a bridge so that we could go across the water. You know, I mean, and it's these kids that are making these lodges look the way they are.
Oh,
you know?
Fantastic.
Well, I don't know. Maybe some of y'all might have seen some recent pictures. We've had some folks from back east that have come down, and they've gone up and done some ceremony up there at the Nebo Creek Lodge grounds, you know. And they've seen that bridge that goes across the water there. And, you know, they've seen some. You know, it's them kids that have been building them things. You know, and so I just, like I said, I just wanted to put a shout out and let them kids know we love them and we appreciate all the hard work they're doing for us.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And maybe I can point you in the direction of some, well, you know, the founding books back in the founder of scouting, you know, Lord Stevenson's, Robert Stevenson's wife, Baden Powell. This guy was a hero of the Boer War in South Africa, and he did something revolutionary. He used boys to take messages back and forth from the front, and he became a big hero. And when he came back to London, you know, he saw, I mean, believe it or not, London, turn of the 20th century, they had the same social problems that, in London they got today: drug addiction, gangs. Wow, you know, so he decided, well, you know, we got a problem. Well, we got to clear this mess up. So he took a bunch of kids off the street. They didn't even have uniforms back then. He decided he was going to form patrols. He took them to Gilwell Island, Gillwell. You can Google that, and he set them up with, you know, good food and new clothing, and made it a lot of fun. They had a scout patrol is usually at least 8, you know, up to 15 or 16 boys. I think they had 5 patrols, maybe more. I've been through Wood Badge, which is the Management Institute of the Boy Scouts of America. By the way, IBM approached the Boy Scouts of America back in the 70s and said, we would like to run all of our IBM executives through. We want to make Wood Badge our executive institute because it was so good at teaching them how to communicate. And the Boy Scouts turned them down. And they said, well, what's the deal? Said, oh, well, you know, if they want to be volunteers in their local areas, they could come on just like anybody else. And so they did. But they formed a bunch of patrols, and the scouting method is inter-patrol competition. You take these little teams. You know, it's basically, you know, a baseball or a football game, but it's a lot of different kinds of games. And you don't go anywhere unless you're singing while you're walking or marching or whatever. And you've got a flag or a guide on. It was, you know, I mean, they call it militaristic today, but that's the way. 600,000 people walked out of Egypt, you know, 4,000 years ago, and they use the Baden Powell used the what the Jews would call a shofar. He called it as a kudu horn. It's one of the horns that's used as a shofar. And really interesting guy. I mean, this. But there are other people, like chiefly Dan Beard, and another guy's last name is Seton, who wrote basically Seton was the head of a movement here in the United States where his movement was based around Native American lore. So here in the U.S., when they started the program, they took Seton's program and Beard's program, put it together with Baden Powell, and formed the Boy Scouts of America in 1910. And but if you go back to those old original books, see, by the 70s, the scouting program had really gotten away from a lot of the original things. So by the time I went through National Executive Institute, they were saying not back to basics, but forward with fundamentals, because they were slipping a lot of areas. And particularly, rather than emphasize, you know, a kid ought to be an Eagle Scout, pressure them to become an Eagle Scout in 1 year, like the elder, they need to, or what scouting is all about is really getting you to be a first class scout, because when you're a first class scout, now you're a real scout. And that's what I did with my son. I said, I don't care if you get, you know, the Eagle. I said, your grandpa got everything he could, you know, back in the 20s, and, you know, and early 30s. He could only get to life because he couldn't afford to go to camp to get the swimming, you know, life-saving badge. And I said, you know, when I presented your grandpa with a Life Scout badge, he cried. And and he was a scouter when he was young. And I said, if you become a first-class scout, I said, you'll make me proud. And it was really interesting because, I mean, the creator even got involved in this. Of course, my son Joe's mom died in 95, right about the time, you know, you and I met James. And he was immediately supplied with another mother, and this was another story for another time, but I mean it was prearranged, and there's a wild story, but creator told Betty that if we didn't teach Joseph honor, that he'd be taken away from us and given to somebody else. And you think that didn't really upset us? And here he was like 10 years old at the time, and so we went over to the library. And, you know, you can't look up honor in the encyclopedia. It's unbelievable. And, of course, I'd been a scout executive, and I said, all I know, you know, where honor is important is, you know, Boy Scouts of America, on my honor, I'll do my best to do my duty to God and my country and obey the Scout law to keep myself physically clean, morally awake, and mentally awake and morally straight. And, Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, clean, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. I said, apparently, God is telling us that if we don't put Joe into scouting, that something bad going to happen to him or us. So we did. And he got his first class badge, and he got in jig time. And he's a better kid for it. But he was a Scorpio, and now that he's like 29 years old, I could see that if I had to raise him alone, you know, he had like 60% of the signs of a future serial killer by the time he was 7. You know, setting fires and, you know, hurting animals and setting fires in people's trash cans. And, you know, if you don't, you nip things in the bud with kids, especially if they're real bullheaded, you know, you can have some real trouble. But he turned out pretty good. He turned out real well, but he had some feelings he wasn't willing to share with me. He was real mad because his mom died, but Betty was able. She had raised 5 kids, and Betty's mom was still alive, and she just loved him like, you know, her own blood. And but scouting is really important, but there's so many other programs that that are out there. And, of course, then now you've got the whole, you know, it's controversy there. But, you know, I don't care. You know, even if there isn't a scout program, you can still run kids through the Lone Scout program as a parent. I think it's really important.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, if you want to know about scouting or, you know, what old books to get from eBay real cheap, you know, because, you know, some of the old field book, you know, back in the 60s is the one you want. The ones they've got since then are crap.
Absolutely. That's the one I want. It was the old one. The old 1974 is the one I remember.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, yeah, you see, you've done your homework. That's interesting. Oh, okay. I'm impressed.
I was a Boy Scout, and I was very much into the Boy Scout program, you know, because for me, that was about life. You know, we lived on a desert, and so everything we learned in that Scout program was about what our ancestors did, you know, what my grandfather did when he built the community that's now exists there, you know, because... You know, my family was one of the first families to this area, aside from the natives who lived here, you know.
Where was that?
In Emory County. My grandfather was George Bryant Gardner. He was the blacksmith that got both the first and second wagon trains of Mormons to Utah.
Huh.
He took them all as far as what's known as winter quarters. And then he outfitted the first wagon train and sent them on into Utah. Well, he got supplies ready, and then when the second wagon train reached him at winter quarters, he outfitted them and then rode with the second wagon train into Utah.
Oh, he must have been a mighty man.
My grandfather is was very well connected with the origins of the Mormon Church.
Huh. Oh, they were mighty men. You know, that was the highest technology they had back in those days. If you were a blacksmith, that was like being somebody who wrote code for Google.
Absolutely. You know, that tradition is still being honored today. That tradition has been handed down in my family from father to son since before the Gardeners arrived here in 1624. It's been handed down father to son. My oldest brother now currently is the family blacksmith and holds that trade. He has no son, so we're hoping that he may pass that trade on to his son-in-law, which would be his daughter's husband there.
Well, they're teaching those kind of skills now at Snow College at Ephraim. They've got some low technology. I mean, there's people that are teaching how to do stonework that are having to go to Scotland to restore some of the old stone buildings over there because nobody knows how to do it. You know, glass blowing. Wow, if I was a kid right now, I would go to Snow from anywhere in the world, and I would go through that program. Matter of fact, I told my kid, I said, 30 years ago, this is going back to 81 now, we're talking, 35 years ago, I knew what was going to be happening, just didn't know when, and I told him, because I was reading Howard Ruff's books, you know, How to Prosper During Coming Bad Years, and Howard Ruff is in his 90s now, but he used to have a cable TV show, and they knew from the economic cycles what was going to be happening sooner or later. And, boy, we're staring down both barrels of it now. But I told them, I said, the rich guy in the future after the crash is going to be the guy that owns a junkyard, that can, a MacGyver kind of guy that makes something out of nothing, field expedient, dirty, just be able to like. Well, basically, I said, if you really want a good education, go to Mexico. I said, those people that you know, they'll take an old Maytag washer we throw away here, and they'll take the timers out of them. The only thing that wears out on them is the timers. The motors never wear out. They just put switches on and off switches. And it's really interesting because even though my kid was a little bit rebellious as a teen, He listened. I mean, like right now he's rebuilding a 1977 Dodge Dart, you know, which has got that slant six. And this kid, I told him, I said, you know, down in Mexico, if you got a slant six, I said they're like gold down there because they never wear out, you know. So my son actually listened to me. Actually, instead of going to college, he got a trade, and he's been in his trade now for I don't know, 10 or 11 years. And I told him back when. Of course, he graduated the head of his class, and in his union, it's the LADS union up in Seattle. And I said, what you're shooting for? I said, you want to become a union rep. I said, that way it won't be all feast and famine. And of course, he went through 3 years of living almost under a bridge, you know, after 2008. But things are picking up there. He says there's construction cranes all over Seattle, and they've been sending them out to Hanford to do work out there. And I said, well, you know, eventually, you know, wouldn't you like to settle down and work 9 to 5? And, you know, you won't be making, you know, $40 an hour, he might make 30, you know. And he says, well, you know, he says, the president of the union is a pretty good friend of mine. We've been working together, and he's been talking to me about it. I said, do it. You know, so, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what the scouting program did for me. You know, you're talking about being able to overcome and stuff. I ain't never had a mechanics class in my life. Never done anything when it comes to mechanic work. Here a few months ago, I set out to change an engine in my truck. Well, 6 engines later, I got a running truck now. I know a little bit about how to change an engine out,
and I know how to change a
transmission out, and I know how to make a whole bunch of other stuff work that I would have never known before.
I'll tell you what it was.
It was that scouting program when I was younger that taught me how to pay attention to things is the reason I was able to say that this truck runs right now.
Yeah, well, I did the same with Joe. We bought a 69 GMC long bed fleet side pickup truck, because back then we were living in a 35-foot fifth wheel, and because Joanne liked we had done that for 3 years because she wanted to do genealogy work, and we wanted to come back to the Southeast, and so we lived in an RV for 3 years, and then we were out of one, and so we went back into one. But Joe loved that truck, and back just after his mom died, we got him into another one. But he met up with a guy up in his union, and he learned how to change engines, motors in and out, and you know what he did. You know, when the union was down, you know, he got a business license, and he was doing more or less concierge mechanical work on old cars and stuff. And I said, I said, you're so smart to have taken my advice. I said, you're going to have a trade, and you're going to get some work when, or at least you'll be able to barter for stuff, because you'll be able to fix, you know, these old cars and trucks that don't have electronic ignitions. And even after EMP, which is coming probably, I mean, everybody's talking about that threat now. I said, only those people are going to have things that are running, if you can even get gasoline. And, I got a smart kid.
I suggest for people who's a little concerned about them things that they start converting their vehicles over to diesel immediately.
Well, I understand that another thing you can do, like if you've got a 350 V8 or any GM project, I've heard that because nowadays you can't even get those old distributors, but you can get marine distributors, because all marine distributors are still, last time I read, are still running. They're not electronic because the seawater gets to and corrodes electronic parts. So I understand a lot of them are still, or there may be enough of them around that you can find them in junkyards. And so convert them over to points, plugs, and condenser.
Yeah. I'm just grateful I got an old 1980 pickup truck that I can rely on.
Yeah. Yeah, they're nice. They're nice. Well, I don't know. I guess it's maybe everything that should have been said has been said, and we ought to get off the air.
maybe for a bit. I very much want, I very much, before we do kind of call this quits for the night, I very much want to, put it out there for all those that are a part of the Native American Church. This is a very beautiful thing. I've watched this church grow over the years, and I've seen a lot of people come in, and I've seen a lot of people have them human, them human things that come up, And people get angry, and they get upset, and other people get happy. But I'll tell you something. I've seen more people willing to help each other out since I've been involved in this church than ever in my whole life beforehand. And so, I just want everybody to remember that if we all stand together, if we can set aside our petty differences, if each one of us can remember one thing, and that's what's important is the connection with our Creator, that spirituality which we're all striving to achieve. If we can keep focused on that, and if we can support our brothers and sisters who are struggling, then there is no stopping us. This is going to be the greatest experience in all of our lifetimes.
We got to get over this arguing about Creator thing. Whether the door should be in the east or in the west, or whether the teepee should have 13 poles or 16 poles or whatever, or whether a lodge even should have two doors. Who cares? That's just dogma.
Well, if you wait long enough, the east will become the west, and it'll be the same thing anyway.
Yeah, right. That's the kind of stuff that. Just quit it. Just stop it.
It's like they say, only the government thinks that you can cut a foot off the top of the blanket, sew it to the bottom of the blanket, and have a longer blanket.
Yeah.
I love you guys. I love each and every one of you out there in this world that's, trying and striving to become a better person. That's what this is really all about. It's each one of us on our own individual journey, striving to become a better person today than we were yesterday, and a better person tomorrow than we are today. I love you all. I bid you all good night.
Good night. And Jeff, I'll send you Dr. Chief Rogers' private phone number again. Anyway, this has been yet another debacle on Auckland Radio. And peace out. Good night, folks.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Otter, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of yore, so that I may remember.